Welcome back. Hollywood Casino Press Box on the all-new 5-Night of the Fan. Frank Cusumano with you till 12 o'clock. But right now we'll talk baseball with Rob Raines. And Rob went a step beyond last night. Everybody reporting just the trade, but then Rob decided to get on the phone and talk to Mr. Gorman about Mr. Libertor, or Libertore. And they are best friends from age five, Rob. Tell us about their relationship.
Yeah, that's crazy, isn't it? I think they spent time together almost every day this winter that they've both been in town. They live out in the Phoenix area, played with each other on just a coach pitch team from age five up through, I guess, until they got to high school, and then they went to different high schools, so they faced each other a few times, actually, and then played together on Team USA and some other, you know, I'm sure, showcase tournaments and stuff like that. So it was a pretty special moment for them. Now, of course, now the question beyond that is now we have to wait and see for sure how long this lasts, because there's a lot of speculation, obviously, that all that time in between yesterday when we found out about, you know, the Libertore coming here, but that who was going in the deal seemed like there was a possibility of a bunch of other speculation going forward. So could they flip Libertore for somebody else? We'll just have to wait and see. I don't know. I could see both sides of it. And if on the face of it by itself, if they just got him in this deal and he's going to be a Cardinal for, you know, years to come, I love the trade. But if they can use him as a piece to maybe go get, you know, a certain third baseman in Colorado or something, I would love that too.
However, let's just assume that this is the trade. There's nothing else looming. What if Randy or Rosarena becomes a 25 home run, 90 RBI, 20 stolen base guy, and then Jose Martinez does what he does and really productive offensive player?
Well, is Libertore going to be a 20-game winner for the Cardinals for 3 years from now, too?
Yeah.
You just never know. And the problem with Rosarena, I mean, everybody loves Jose Martinez. I mean, a great guy, glue guy on that team, played a valuable role. But obviously, look, he was going to be in a limited role, you know, so he's a secondary kind of player to get a guy like, you know, a frontline, middle-of-the-rotation guy who could be a starter for a long time in this league. But the thing about Randy is, you know, obviously, yeah, he's a great prospect. They really like him. But look at the pecking order of the prospects. I mean, where would he have gotten that chance to play, you know, to get those kind of numbers in St. Louis? I don't think so, unless you had about four guys ahead of him that all went down. You know, if Bader slumps, if Thomas slumps, if Carlson slumped, if O'Neill slumped, then Rosarena might have got his chance. But he was behind all of those guys.
Well, we know that the Cardinals view Dylan Carlson as a better prospect than Randy or Rosarena. Do you think they had Lane Thomas higher on their depth chart, or do you think they believe long-term Lane Thomas has a chance to be a better player?
Yes, but also remember this, Lane Thomas came from the Tampa Bay organization. That's where the Cardinals got him. So Tampa Bay obviously, you know, thought that they'd had him once before and were probably interested in bringing him back too. So keep that in mind when you're figuring out which one of these guys the Cardinals were going to trade. So,
Rob Raines with us, Hollywood Casino Press Box on the all-new 5-Night of the Fan. Does this trade increase the chances of Marcell Ozuna remaining a Cardinal?
It definitely increases it. I don't know if it increases it to the point where it's going to happen, but, you know, you got two less guys that would have been competing for outfield playing time off the roster, and you got now at least two, you know, open spots on the 40-man roster, so you certainly have that option. But the problem with Ozuna is, and obviously very good player, you know, I still think he's going to want a multi-year long-term contract, and we just have seen recent examples where that doesn't work out, and it kind of puts a anchor around the Cardinals' neck in terms of what moves they could make, you know, for the going forward for the future. All winter they've talked about giving these kids a chance, you know, giving Carlson a chance, giving Thomas a chance, seeing if Bader can bounce back and be an everyday player, and what is O'Neill going to do if he gets, you know, enough at bat. So they're not going to, you know, if they add Ozuna back into that mix, they're taking at least one of those guys out of that equation, or now you're trying to fit five guys into one hole, and that just goes against everything the Cardinals have said that they want to do this winter. So could it happen? Sure, but I still find it unlikely.
The one thing that I don't want to see like written or people talking about is that Harrison Bader has a job, has a starting spot locked up. That is just the most preposterous thing of all time, that you could head into the spring training saying, well, Harrison's our center fielder after he just hit 207.
Right, and I think, you know, that's what I'm saying. I think that's you got to say somebody's there to start with. I mean, start with Dexter Fowler. You know what I mean? I mean, I know Fowler had a better year last year, but the problem with Fowler, of course, is the contract. But to me, you know, it's not my money. I don't care, you know, how much money a guy's making. I want the best three outfielders playing. And whoever those three are going into the season, that's who I would put in the starting outfield. And I don't care if somebody's feathers gets ruffled because they're making a lot of money and sitting on the bench. I mean, I know that sometimes causes problems and headaches for the manager, but, you know, the goal is to win and to put, you know, your best nine players out there on the field. And that's what I hope they do.
All right. So if the Cardinals did call Colorado and they say, we're going to give you Matthew Liberatore, Dakota Hudson, and Tyler O'Neill, would that be enough for Nolan Arenado?
No. Put Gorman in the deal. Put maybe, you know, another pitcher in the deal. Maybe Kisner in the deal. Yeah, and that's why I say. And then what do you do with Matt Carpenter? I mean, that's, you know, I love Nolan Arenado, and I think he's a great player. He'd be a perfect fit on this team. He'd be Scott Rowland 2.0, maybe with better offensive numbers. But I just don't see now with the timing of it how that works, because I mean, again, we're already talking about having to pay Fowler or having to pay him or play him. You'd have to do the same thing with Carpenter. I mean, because they both have no trade contracts, and I just think the timing of it just doesn't work. As much as I'd love to see Nolan Arenado, and as much as it, you know, we turn around, it could happen this afternoon, but I would be surprised, because I just don't see it fitting with what the Cardinals say they want to do, and knowing how they act with some of their, you know, more veteran players.
But if you had, you know, the opportunity to get Arenado and he becomes a Cardinal, you could probably find a taker if you, you know, eat half of Carpenter's contract. I mean, couldn't you call Kansas
if he would agree to it? That's what I'm saying. He holds the decision. He doesn't have to agree to a trade.
Yeah, but if the alternative is, you know, you're going to be a two-game-a-week player, or maybe you go somewhere else and you play. I mean, if you lay it out to him, I mean, look.
Well, he's, I understand the logic. I understand the logic of it, and I'm not disagreeing with you. I'm just saying I'd be surprised if that happened.
Yeah. So the odds of there's also some talk that the Red Sox love Matthew Liberatore. Yeah. What do you think about this in a deal with Mookie Betts?
Again, it just all depends on what you'd have to put in the deal. I mean, the problem with Betts, of course, is you'd be getting 1 year of certainty, because he's a free agent at the end of the last year. You know, next year he's going to want a lot of money. I'd love to have him. I mean, I talked about him from the beginning of the winter, that he was the guy who would be a perfect fit on this ball club, just like I said Arenado last year would be, you know, going into his last year of free agency. But I think there's less chance that you would be able to re-sign Betts, you know, long-term. And then you'd be giving up, you know, years of control and potential. I mean, the Cardinal offense looked better this year than it was last year. I mean, I know that's what everybody's harping on, but, you know, these kids, the outfielders can play. You know me. I mean, I'm big on the prospects. I always have been. I love to see them play, and I love to see them get a chance in the big leagues. And I think Thomas and Carlos can both be solid everyday major league players and produce offensively, as well as, you know, be above average defensively. And, you know, if you look into the 2022 starting rotation, you can roll out Flaherty, Hudson, Liberatore as your top three guys. You know, then you got Zach Thompson, the kid they signed last year, first round pick out of Kentucky. I mean, that's, you know, four really good young starting pitchers for you. You'll have under cost control for years to come. So now I really think the next 2 years, as much as Cardinal fans want to win now, you know, and win everything every year, the next 2 years are almost going to be a transition period for this club, because you're going to see, you know, Carpenter, Fowler, Cecil, Molina, Wainwright, you know, some of those contracts are going to go away in the next 2 years, and then you're going to have room for these younger guys to come up and take over. So, and I still think this too. I mean, I'm not saying it's going to be it's not a rebuild, it's not a tank or anything like that, because I think this club, as it's constituted today, still is the best team in the National League Central. I still think they're the favorite to win the division, even with the, you know, challenges that they have going forward, you know, this year and even probably next year. But I think, you know, that's, they're building a team now. As I say, could they move some of these prospects and be better team tomorrow than they are today? Sure. But I like the chances both of winning today, and I like the chances of winning 2 years from now if they hold on to these kids.
So, Liberatore, I've heard three different pronunciations.
Yeah, I'm not sure which one.
Yeah, Liberatore, I don't know what it is. But anyway, he immediately becomes the number one pitching prospect in your organization. And give us an idea of what this 6'5 lefty stuff is like, and does he remind you of anybody?
I have not seen him personally enough to give you a call, but he's like 6'5 or 6'6. I mean, he's tall. He's not a little, you know, scrawny little left-hander, which a lot of these left-handed guys are. You know, I mean, he throws low to mid-90s. He's still only 20 years old, so he's going to get, but just turned 20 in November. So he's going to get bigger. He's going to get stronger physically. You know, he's got added a slider last year, according to Nolan Gorman. I asked him for his scouting report, and he said he's a bulldog on the mound, tries to intimidate guys. I didn't put this in the story, but he actually brought up Max Scherzer's name as a guy that he kind of, you know, liked to follow as far as, you know, attitude and stuff on the mound as far as, you know, in trying to, you know, want to win and want to be the best out there every day. So I think his competitive edge is a plus. You know, good control, you know, throw strikes. You know, I think he's obviously, the Rays brought him along slowly. You know, he pitched like 78 innings last year in low class A, because they want to kind of just, you know, bring him along slowly. So I would think he's a kid that'll probably start this year at Palm Beach. But I would think by May, June at the latest, he'll be playing in Springfield. And I think you're looking at about a two-year window with minor leagues before he'd be ready to pitch in the big leagues.
And the reason the Rockies have been rumored to be shopping their franchise player is because they know they're never going to be able to beat the Dodgers, or not in the immediate future. So with Arenado, so why have a guy on your roster making $35 million a year if you're not going to win anyway? Is that correct? Or
I think so. I think they, you know, in retrospect, they probably should have traded him before they signed him to that contract, you know, and got what they could get out of the deal. But I mean, he's the face of the franchise. He's been their best player, and is, you know, one of the top, probably arguably five best players in the game. So who wouldn't want that guy on your team? But we all know baseball is a team game. One person, no matter how good of a player he is, you know, even if he's, you know, Barry Bonds or Hank Aaron or whatever, they're not going to help a team win by themselves. It takes a team effort. And I think they're searching to figure out what the best way to build a team is out there, and how you know, they thought they could sign Arenado to a good contract and build around him. And that just didn't happen a year ago. And the problem with Colorado too, is that, you know, they just signed him to that contract a year ago. So how much of a drastic change in focus and change in, you know, attitude or style would be to then turn around and say, okay, we were wrong, we're going to trade him now, you know? And I just think that they'd be taking a real big slap in their own face to do that. So unless they get overwhelmed with a prospect, they, you know, package, they find somebody willing to take on that entire contract and that kind of thing, and they could sell it that way, I don't know. Because then the other problem you got from a team trading for Arenado's standpoint is, how much talent do you give up knowing that he could leave after 2 years? You know, I mean, I know people talk about the opt-outs, so that's a good thing. If, you know, if he tops out, that means he's had two great years and you probably won, you know, back-to-back pennants. Yeah, but then you don't want the guy to leave, you know. So I think that's also an issue that kind of affects the price of what you're willing to pay to give up all those guys with all those years of control and all that potential and future for a guy that you know possibly could help you for 2 years and then leave.
And your stance on Dylan Carlson is a little different than the Cardinals' stance on Dylan Carlson. You say, give him a spot, let him play, and then we'll check in 600 at-bats later at the end of next season.
I say give him the spot if he earns it. You know, if he goes out and has a bad spring training, they're not going to make him the starting left fielder. But if he goes out and plays this spring like he did last spring and like he played last year in Springfield, yeah, I would not be hesitant at all to put him in the opening day lineup in left field, just like I would play Lane Thomas as the opening day center fielder. I think those guys have earned a chance at this point, depending on how the spring goes, to let's find out if they can play. I mean, and that's what I'm saying. That's what the Cardinals have said they want to do. They want to give an opportunity to these guys, and let's see. I mean, have they really given Tyler O'Neill a shot either? You know, you could argue no. I mean, he's had not more of an opportunity than either one of those guys, and the problem is he's always seems to get hurt when he gets that opportunity. So, you know, you could probably, you know, squeeze three guys into two spots and get enough playing time for all of them, but once you get beyond that, it gets a lot trickier.
Because one guy who's going to have to play every day is Tommy Edman. Now, he may get a game a week at second base, a game a week at third base, a game a week at short, but then he could get two or three in the outfield, right?
Probably, if that's the way they want to do. But there again, you know, his best position is second base and third base. So, you know, that's where he should get the bulk of his playing time. And how they parcel that out is going to be an interesting situation as well. Because, yeah, he could play any of the three outfield spots, but I don't know that you really would play him ahead of Thomas or ahead of Carlson if you really want to find out what those guys could do. You know, I mean, I think, you know, that Edman obviously is a guy that they really, really like, and I think they feel like he could fill a valuable role on this team in a number of different ways. But it's going to be a fascinating spring to see how they kind of piece all of this roster together and the playing time together, even if they don't make any other moves between now and the start of camp.
Great stuff. Rob, if somebody wants to read you and follow you on Twitter, tell our listening audience how you do it.
At stlsportspage.com is the website. There's also a Twitter handle by that name, and then my personal Twitter is Rob Raines, RobRaines.
Good stuff. Rob, we appreciate it. We'll talk soon.
Thanks, Rick.
All right, Rob Raines joining us.